Now, it's time for a little R&R.
Ball into the bucket, lays it up and in.
Ball game, Rizzo!
Live in the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios, this is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
This team is going to be tough when they finally get it together.
Sit back and relax. Let Russo and Rizzo take you home.
Oh, mercy!
I'll tell you one thing, is as good as it gets today. You know, on a midweek edition of Russo and Rizzo, you got four games to take you through, divisional series games, to take you through a Wednesday. Not a lot to complain about on our end. It's Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Colin Russo with you. We got Mike Rizzo. We got Christian Catworth, City Place Studios in downtown West Palm Beach, streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter /X at ESPN West Palm. You can catch us there and the ESPN South Florida app, streaming live for the next 2 hours. We've got a packed program today. We're going to talk to Chris Swager, the Kaiser University Athletic Director. Got a lot of baseball to break down and a couple football storylines to keep our eyes on as we inch closer to the next week of big sport weekend action. October, the best month of sports all throughout. The Yankees last night back against the wall, down 6-1. As good of a victory as they have had in years. The New York Yankees, they won in Game 3 of the ALDS 9-6. And Aaron Judge, bottom of the fourth inning, you know, two men on. Take a listen to what Aaron Judge did in that moment. Down 3, 6-3 in the bottom of the fourth.
Two-strike pitch. Hits a drive down the line. If it's Ferris's moment, it is! It's tied! Judge has arrived!
Great call by Joe Davis on the Fox there. He does such a good job. But, perfect.
If it's fair, it's his moment. Talk about being in the moment as an announcer. I got to be careful here because I've watched a lot of baseball in my time. I don't think I've ever seen that pitch get knocked out of the park like that.
And they were doing the StatCast 100 miles an hour. It was 100 plus off the plate on the inside, basically near his upper torso hands, and he was able to take it to the left foul pole.
Yeah.
And a bizarre home run. And based on everybody's evaluation on the StatCast side of things, on a pitch like that all year, nobody's ever hit a home run.
No.
Not from that position. And so it was one of the, if you just look at the pitch, an unbelievable pitch to hit a home run with. And it's just one of those pitches that only one of maybe two people in the league can do something like that.
Yeah, I think the other guy's Tarek Skubal that threw a 101 on the hands like that. So, obviously, that home run tying the game, and I think single-handedly having the Yankees win the series. I'm going there. I think the Yankees are going to win the series.
You do?
I'm there.
I don't know about that.
They had their moment. They had their magical moment last night that's going to propel them. As a Cleveland fan, I've seen it too many times. I've seen them be down 0-2 and come back, win three games in a row, and win a series.
Now, the weird part is the Blue Jays are not punting, but they're not going for it in Game 4 because the New York Yankees have Cam Schlittler on the mound, who the last time we saw him went 8 scoreless against the Boston Red Sox and a back-against-the-wall victory in Game 3 of the AL Wild Card.
Wow, yep.
So now he's back, and they could have went Kevin Gausman early. Instead, they're bullpen gaming tonight.
Yeah.
So, and bullpen gaming with a bunch of guys, including Varland, who's starting out the game, who pitched yesterday, and is the guy who gave up the big home run to Aaron Judge and the guy who got bombed in that fourth inning. So, they're not punting, but all favor the Yankees tonight. I'd be shocked. I agree with you in the sense that I'd be shocked if they won tonight. Mm-hmm. I'd be shocked if the Blue Jays were able to pull
it out. I can't believe they're not going
to
go Bieber.
What?
The Blue Jays.
Well, they're going to save that's way too early. That's way too early. He went on...
No, he didn't pitch. Yes, Savage pitched, and then Gausman.
Yeah, but he came in off of it, no? Did he not pitch?
I'm pretty sure Bieber is not pitching this series. I'll double check on that.
He was yesterday, right? Yeah, he was yesterday.
Was he?
Because he only went two. Yeah, he was yesterday.
Because
they went with
him. Because I came in late. I came into the game late. That's why.
Yeah, he was. He pitched yesterday, but they're going to go. So they have Yes, Savage. And they're going to have Gausman in Game 5.
If it
gets to a Game 5, which is when that would be really interesting. Because do you go Fried again, who got destroyed in Game 2? But the Yankees got to get through tonight. The one thing about Toronto is Toronto's still scoring runs. They still had 6 runs yesterday before he could blink. And Vladdy Guerrero is playing as good as anybody in this entire league on the plate.
It was 2-0 before he could blink.
And it's been that way every at-bat. He's either in 10. They should have started walking him, and then everybody else was getting hits.
Mm-hmm.
Dalton Varsho. It was everybody. They are situated. They're a little bit like the Brewers in the sense that it's almost anybody every given night. They don't have the names, but that's sort of the danger that they provide. Now,
are you worried about the Yankees starting pitching, the way it's been shelled? I mean, Rodon got shelled. Freed got shelled.
Here's the thing. I mean, Cam Schmidtler is now another back against the wall moment. Gotta have it against an offense that is a lot better than what Boston put out there in Game 3.
Yeah.
So he is dealing with not just like a four guys, don't worry about the rest of the lineup. He's dealing with a 1-9.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's going to be the story of the game is, number one, can the Yankees capture some of the magic that they had yesterday offensively? But are the Blue Jays going to go after the rookie early? And if they do, Devin Williams went 2 last night. Like, this is going to be a scratch and claw game. Go with anybody at any given moment. But if you'd love for Cam Schmidtler to give you 6-7, if he gets you 6 innings, 7 innings,
it's a
success. You're a very, very happy camper.
And it's really something the Yankees haven't had all series long. I mean, the starting pitching just has been non-existent. The Freed thing was the most, I think, alarming. Granted, it was on the road.
He's been an up-and-down postseason
pitcher.
Still, it's weird.
A guy who maybe any other year could possibly win a Cy Young. Like, I don't know. I think they're going to need some from Schmidtler. If he goes 2
they're
innings,
absolutely
similar,
gonna need him.
Listen, if he goes 3-4, this isn't going to be a game. I think that the Blue Jays are going to be able to get
on
top of them.
Well, if he goes 3 or 4, then that means getting hit. And that means if he's getting hit, they're in a lot of trouble.
Cruz, Doval, Hill, Williams, Bednar all pitching yesterday. They cannot afford to go to that bullpen early.
But it's do or die. So you put anybody in
Of course.
If your back is really up against it, you put in Freed.
Yeah.
And it is one of those days where it is any given day.
Yeah.
Be ready. If you show up to the ballpark, you're ready to pitch.
By the way, the Bieber thing, they took him out early. That's why I'm like, when the hell
did he... two in.
Yeah, it was, I mean,
that's
2
in.
The third inning where the Yankees really started that, started to come back a little bit is when they kind of panicked and took him out. But with these two teams, do you think the winner of this could win the whole thing?
I'm not going to say that because I do think what we're seeing right now with the Mariners and the Tigers is this is another low scoring pitch by committee. It's a little different. The Yankees and the Blue Jays were all about offensive production. The Mariners and the Tigers are a little bit about the other side of things and making sure that the ball stays in play. So that's where I lean towards the side of, hey, you're going to have great defense versus great offense coming up. I'm rooting for the Mariners in that sense, but Detroit's played well.
To be fair, too, I said the winner of Yankees and Red Sox would go to the World Series. I got no choice.
But the thing about it,
on the Yankees here.
Had their moment. Judge finally vindicates his legacy a little bit because he had good stats coming in, and he didn't have a moment. He didn't have a high leverage at bat that was memorable throughout the entire postseason. He needed that game yesterday where he had that high leverage at bat, changes a game, saves the team. He needed to have a game like yesterday because it makes everything else look that much better because he's been a good hitter that hasn't necessarily changed games. You want to talk about the Duran drop in Game 3? Go right ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, he has gotten these bloop singles in the 8th inning, whether it's either not a game anymore or it's not a high leverage at bat. There's no runners in scoring position. That has been his postseason to this point. He needed a game like yesterday to vindicate this playoff lack of big moments. He needed that.
And
hopefully this sort of opens up the world a little bit because the team opened up right when he did that.
I think that was his biggest hit in postseason history. Now, Yankee fan Christian might have a better one for me. But
He had that home run off Class A last year, and that was a huge one. But they didn't end up winning the game. That was
right.
The problem, but that's one that comes to mind as well.
Yeah, I think with everything involved, with Soto leaving last year, before the year, and him being the main vocal point of the team, I think that was the biggest hit in his postseason career, especially if they're able to come back tonight. Now, I ask you this, Kyle. That was the biggest Yankee home run since... Are we there? Is the Soto home run against the Guardians last year in the ALCS?
I mean, that was a big one, and
But like
that was Game 3 last year was Judge against Class A when they were down as well.
Yeah, but the Soto home run is... That's what won him the series.
Right.
So, like... I think
I'm not willing to say that it kept them alive. It kept them alive, and it wasn't a go ahead, and it was in the 4th inning.
I
they still scored 3 runs after he was done with that. Keep that in mind.
I just think with him being the main part of the team, like last year was him and Soto, it was a tandem. You know, Stanton was hitting the big home runs too. I feel like this year is his team. And it's his team. He's the guy, and he stepped up in the moment to make things 6-6. Could that be the swing to change momentum in the series, I guess?
I think in a literal sense, it's only the American League Division Series, so we know that versus the ALCS. But, Mike, you're right. You are right. This is the biggest home run hit in the Yankees era of the Baby Bombers growing into Aaron Judge's team because of the questions around his playoff performances, even though this year he has the numbers to back it off, but not the moment. And then you check off the box of having the moment. I do think it is.
And as Christian, as a Yankee fan, I'm sure you're hoping that this is the home run that is the snowball effect, like a big one tonight.
Yeah, it could be an avalanche. Absolutely.
And Judge is that kind of player, Colin, to where to see one go out of the park, it could be all he needs to get on a run here.
I had tears in my eyes last night.
He's got six home runs when facing elimination.
I am happy for you, honestly.
He's got six home runs when facing elimination.
Hang on. You guys are the trolls of the show where you want to see me live on camera, my team.
I want to see the Yankees
completely
lose.
Capitulate.
I want to see I want to see them too. Sweat.
You want them not in the ALCS?
Yeah, because I want them to fire the general manager, and I want to see if they're willing to
do that. Yankees in the ALCS. Not more of a reason to talk baseball on the airwaves. Just remember that.
We're talking baseball. Yeah,
it's happening regardless.
But Christian,
you're getting less trouble when you talk about baseball on the airwaves.
There you go. But Christian, I think the implications of the homer, they were higher. Like, he finally broke through. Breakthrough moment.
Here's the way I'll say that. The right way to phrase this is, if he doesn't hit that homer and they lose this game, there's a chance the general manager and manager both get fired. There is a chance.
Booney?
Both. And especially Boone.
Love saying
if they get swept in that divisional series, it doesn't matter about the Red Sox. There's a chance that they move on a manager. They probably wouldn't, but there's a chance that they really make some big changes. This game probably erases that.
So, Christian Cat, tears in your eyes last night, watching Judge,
voice got
captain.
I was happy for him.
Watching him finally. And Christian texted chat. That's how I know he was super juiced.
I do
about
like
it.
Judge, though. I do root for Judge as an individual.
Do you have faith? Because I'm ready to say the Yankees are winning the series.
Oh, yeah.
Are you there?
Listen,
that game five is going to be very hard to win. Very hard.
I can be pessimistic all I want in the preseason, in spring training, in the regular season on a June swoon. But when the cards are on the table, the chips are pushed to the middle, I believe the Yankees will win every single game. Like that's just how it's going to work.
Yeah.
So I am convinced that they will win the series. But if you're a sports bettor, you should not use that in any sense of the word impact your wager.
Now, Christian, you mentioned the crying. Colin, when was the last time you cried watching a sporting event?
They were in my eyes. They did not hit my cheek.
He was crying. When was the last time you cried?
Long time.
Watching a sporting event?
Long time. What is there to cry about? That I've had. UConn? Nah, I mean, like,
Chavez year.
I was, yeah. I mean, that was, you know, 11 years ago. But think about it. UConn won the championship. I was watching it at 4 in the morning because I was in Italy. So I was, like, waiting to go to sleep, and it was a game that they mostly dominated. Same with Purdue. They beat Purdue the following year. That was one of the best college teams of all time. And that was a game that they were mostly uncontested in that second half. So it was never a doubt that that team was not going to win. And other than that, Wisconsin has been terrible every time that I've watched them. Jacksonville, I cried tears of annoyance when Jacksonville lost to the Patriots in the AFC Championship game in 2017.
Never had a chance, by the way. Shouldn't even have beaten Pittsburgh in
the
round
before. They were up 20-10 in the fourth quarter. They get a recovered fumble by Miles Jack, and he does not get touched. He runs down the field. They call it dead early. Would have ended the game, 17-point game with 9 minutes to go. I do not want to hear it.
Dare I say,
it would have been Nick Foles versus Blake Bortles in the Super Bowl, and it would have been lauded as one of the great moments in the history of the NFL.
The referees would have never let that happen, hence the Miles Jack call. I do agree with you. They got the bad end of that, but they were never winning that game. Boys, I got it.
That was when I was so upset that I think I had some tears. And you know what else I got upset to? I got upset when the Raiders beat the Jets on a Hail Mary in week 9 of the 2020 NFL season. Because the Jets were winless, the Jags were winless, and I wanted Trevor Lawrence. It was the tank for Lawrence. He was about 10 games into the season, so you already knew that. And the Jets were down to the Jets were up against the Derek Carr Raiders, and Greg Williams, who's the defensive coordinator for the New York Jets, on the final play of the game. You could look it up. It was Henry Ruggs. 55-yard or like a 50-yard-ish Hail Mary to Henry Ruggs to win the game basically at the last moment. And Greg Williams sent an 8-man blitz at the last play of the game when there's a 4-2-40 guy running down the seam, and Derek Carr just lays it up for him, and it ends the game. And the Jets had the worst strength of schedule, and that's why they were still at the number one pick. And that would have been, what is that? That's Zach Wilson versus Trevor Lawrence. And Trevor Lawrence is, you know, the Josh Allen of Jameis Winston's, but still, that's a lot better than Zach Wilson.
Funny,
that was another one I was very upset
Kyle,
about.
Obviously, that draft was in Cleveland, the COVID draft. I saw Lawrence get drafted, but he wasn't there. So I was always hoping, you know, Trevor would turn into something. He still can. I'm interested. So, like, 888-760-3776, our producer, Christian Catt, tears of joy. He was crying. You know, he says he had tears in his eyes. It's called crying. When was the last time you cried? And do you think it's okay to cry being a grown-ass man? Because I'm kind of on
in sports, right? Like, are we not talking about in life?
Just, yeah, in sports.
Like, yeah, my dog died. I cried. So, Mike's going to say I'm not a man.
I'm going to be honest. I love my dog. I did not cry when my dog died. He died on my birthday. And I was like, I don't know. I'm not a crier.
Let me rephrase.
It's very bizarre.
888-760-3776. When was the last time you cried in one of your favorite teams in sports from a sporting event, a sport-related thing? And do you think it's okay for grown men like ourselves to cry? I cried for the Buckeyes winning last year, naturally, losing to Michigan, going on that run and seeing the confetti drop. That was a very special one. We all cried in 14 when we were at Jerry World, sophomore years at Ohio State. We were all crying on the field. I cried in 16 when Rajay hit the home run because I thought we were going to win. And then rain delay happened and the MLB made sure that we weren't, you know, going to play, and they made sure we weren't going to win the World Series. I cried in 16. 16 was huge. Bron, Kyrie, the shot. What a moment. I'm trying to think what else. I did cry with the Browns. You want to know where I cried with the Browns? When they locked the playoff spot. I was there against.
When? With Baker?
No, Joe Flacco.
You cried about the Joe Flacco Brown team?
Because we went to the playoffs.
Well, I know. And so did the Baker team.
I saw it in person. I was at the stadium. We beat the Jets. And
Joe
we were
Flacco
going to the playoffs.
Made you cry tears of joy?
I think it was the vibe in the whole stadium, not a seat to be had. We were all ready to go from the jump. We knew we were going to beat the crap out of the Jets and go to the playoffs that year. And the game ended, and I saw, Colin, 7-year-old men sobbing because they thought it was finally the year. And granted, we got smoked
it
in
was
the
not,
first round.
It was far from it.
But just the vibe of the place, I was sobbing. I was crying.
888-760-3776. When was the last time you cried watching sports? We got Seattle and Detroit going on right now. Bottom four. Seattle's up 2-0 in game four of the ALDS. They're up 2-1 in the series in elimination game.
You have a gripe.
Well, here's
the thing.
If you watch the game on FS1 and you look in the crowd, and even yesterday the fans did a good job of mostly hanging around. I mean, it took them a little bit to get into it. You look around in this Detroit stadium, Comerica Park, down in downtown Detroit today, there is a lot of open seats. A lot of open seats, especially in that second deck. It is a elimination game playoff, October 8th, on a Wednesday, and the Detroit fan can't show up? I mean, are they that looped up in the Lions? Are the Pistons getting you jazzed? It's not Michigan. There's people there, but it's not sold out. Not even close. That is ridiculous. I saw it in the third inning. I'm like, guys, they're not showing up late. It's the third inning. The Detroit fan, after we give all that flack to the Cleveland fan.
Please.
Where's the Detroit fan?
Give me a break.
Where's the Detroit fan? And this is an elimination game. Not a good showing from the Detroit fan.
They're playing
bad. Phony fan base.
They're playing bad right now, too. So I know it's
they
very
gotta show. They got to show a couple. See, it's good in the front rows. That's fine. But I got to see they're not showing any sky cams anymore. They did in the third inning. It was a joke. Nonetheless, we got Chris Swager, the Kaiser University Athletic Director, joining us on the other side of things. Stay tuned for it. It's Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Speaking of reasons to cry, Florida State had a rough showing against Miami over the weekend. Colin Russo, Mike Rizzo, Christian Catt. It's Russo and Rizzo and ESPN 106.3. Download the ESPN South Florida app and listen to me and Mike. Listen to Theoretically Speaking. Listen to all of our extended high school coverage. Listen to it all. It's on the app. And if you missed any of it, you can listen just about anywhere. You don't have to be near a radio. You don't have to be near the social medias. You can just be on the app. Miss what Mike said? It's on the app. If you missed the high school coverage, if you missed the Kaiser University football games on Saturdays, it's on the app. If you listen over the weekend, you can listen to all those Kaiser games on the app. Free to download on the App Store. Speaking of the Kaiser Seahawks, I'd like to welcome in good friend of program, Florida State man himself, Mr. Chris Swagger, the Kaiser University Athletic Director. Let's do a little Ask the AD.
It's time to Ask the AD. Kaiser University Athletic Director Chris Swagger joins Russo and Rizzo to talk all things college sports, the latest on Kaiser athletics, and more. Ask the AD is presented by Kaiser Seahawks Athletics. Learn more at KUSeahawks.com.
Live in studio, the Kaiser University Athletic Director, Chris Swagger. Chris, welcome in. How are you today? What's going on?
I'm doing good. Another strong week at Kaiser University.
Just for Kaiser, not the other universities.
No, just for Kaiser. Well, for Kaiser University in general, great week. And
big football win over the weekend.
Yeah, big football win. We got another one this week playing Florida Memorial, who just upset. Last two wins were against ranked teams. So we got that going on down in Miami. And then women's soccer is holding at number one. Men's soccer is up to number six with another poll coming out next week. So if we do well, we'll probably move up again. So,
are you on the road with any of the teams anytime soon?
I'll be going down to Miami this weekend. So we'll be down there. And then we got a two-game homestand coming back. We play St. Thomas, and then we play Weber for homecoming.
Yeah, big games. Yeah. Okay. Looking forward to that. That should be good stuff in terms of the fall sports side of things. Let's talk about NCAA for a second.
Okay.
Florida State. We talked about crying during sports. Right. Mike cries, you know, 3-4 times a year for sports.
He's exaggerating, Chris, yeah. But I cried last year when the Buckeyes won the championship with everything that surrounded that, the Fire Day stuff, the Michigan stuff.
The Fire Day stuff. The suspect is Mike on the Fire Day. I mean, let's take a look around. He was the biggest component.
He was vindicated.
But point is, yeah, Mike cries a couple times a year on the sporting events. Christian cried last night when Aaron Judge had that game-tying home run in the fourth inning for the Yankees yesterday. Christian Catt, well-renowned Yankee fan who loves going to wrestling events instead of Yankee games during the postseason. By the way, that's neither here nor there. True story, happened last week.
For another day.
But are you a crier watching sports?
I'm not a crier watching sports.
What do you think of people who are criers who watch sports?
I mean, to each their own. I mean, from an emotional standpoint, I don't know. I don't really get the crying.
So Mike's in his
apartment. I get if you're playing. Like, you know, I've been on the field. You know,
but Chris, I went to Ohio State. I've rooted for the team my whole life.
I see the emotion with, you know, guys on the field after they win. You know, last year, but I think you called the Benedictine game when we came back, and there was a lot of emotion there in national championships. But yeah, I don't know.
Chris, fourth generation Buckeye fan, I need to grow up. I wouldn't say grow up.
I'm just saying I'm not a crier in general. So I mean, if you're a crying person,
is that what you're saying? Mike's a crying person.
I'm an emotional guy.
You're an emotional guy.
Yeah, it's all right. I don't mind. I don't mind it.
The tear ducts go with you. It's right. You could get them operated. Can you cry on command?
Well, yeah, I probably.
So how about that?
I'll try to cry while you talk to Chris.
Yeah, Mike cares a lot about his teams. He's an emotional fan, so there's something to that. But you, for example, Florida State wins the national championship. You don't cry?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, I remember when they beat Auburn. It was more excitement, but and then I was in Tallahassee in '99 when they won.
Were you in school then?
Yeah.
Wow.
And you didn't cry?
No, I did not cry. Don't remember crying. Yeah, there was spots of memory.
He was not in an emotional state of mind.
So we're Chris, running to Tennessee Street.
The only reason I ask, I was in college in 16. At this time, I was at Ohio University by now. My buddy Johnny Spalk and I, huge Indian fans at the time, Rajay Davis hit the home run. I started crying. I was little drunky poo, but, you know, I started crying.
You can't cry in the middle of the game.
Do you think, just let me ask you this question.
We were down like Chicago. Yeah, I don't have to tell you the game.
Do you think it's also, and I'm not classifying the city, but Cleveland sports has this history of not winning or doing well.
I mean, yeah.
Do you think there's a, part of like the winning along with the losing that pulls it together?
Right.
The highs and the lows.
I think you're onto that because, you know, we don't win a lot of championships as of the last, you know, 40 years. So I think a lot of that has a lot to do with it for sure. I cried at when the Browns solidified a playoff game 2 years ago, and Colin couldn't believe it.
That's ridiculous.
Did you cry with Joe Flacco getting traded?
No.
He cried when Joe Flacco got them to the postseason.
I did.
That's stupid. That's a waste of time.
But Chris, it was the first time I ever saw the Browns in person clinch a playoff spot. That meant a lot.
Do you have a crying checklist?
I kind of do when it comes to sport.
Like a bucket list of cries.
What's the most average game? To. Yeah, the not big game that got the tear ducts going. Has there been like that regular that Joe Flacco one? I think would probably take the cake.
I'm trying to think. This is an easy one. 04 when the Buckeyes beat Braylon Edwards in Columbus. I was at the game. Ted Ginn Jr., Cleveland guy.
Yeah.
My dad. I'd be on the sidelines with Coach Ginn watching him play 2 years ago. Prior to that, him and Troy Smith, by the way. And Ted Ginn reversed fields and took a punt to the house. I was crying in the stands.
Must have been, what, 11?
Like 10 years
ago. When the Cavs won. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, granted, my buddy Tom Vilton, we were throwing dishes at the ceiling in the restaurant. It was anything goes. I mean, we were crying.
Dishes
we were
tears.
Hugging. We were kissing. There was a lot of stuff
just
going on that
just destroying the restaurant.
Oh. And you know, you're grabbing some significant others and kissing them. You might not know them.
It's like
New
Year's.
It is what it is. Yeah. Yeah. It's like
New
Year's Eve.
Strangers after the Cavs.
Strangers. There you go. I'd say it's
excitement and anger. That's the two emotions. So if you lose, it's anger. And you win, it's
trying to think.
So.
Yeah, anger. That's an interesting one. My Uncle Scott.
I was so angry that tears formed. I never like cried down the cheek like what Christian said, but tears formed when the Jets beat the Raiders in that regular season game to lose the number one overall pick in 2020. It's a long story, but that made me upset because I wanted Trevor Lawrence.
Chris is a hard, you know what? He doesn't cry.
You got an emotional side.
You got an emotional side.
I mean, I got kids. I would say I'm emotional for that, but
Chris, could Kaiser Athletics do anything that would get tears out of you?
A winless season.
I was thinking positive, but
no, yeah,
You win too much.
I mean, again, I wouldn't.
There's expectation.
Excitement, and then there's anger.
There's the expectation.
Yeah, I don't think so.
What's a program similar to what the tennis team did last spring? What's a team? A program that all right?
If they get one.
I mean, women's tennis would be emotional.
Women's tennis is not good.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't cry, but
you wouldn't cry at a women's tennis event?
No, I'd be excited. But
when they win, and Chris Swagger, they just cut to you, and you're on the side with tears.
I mean,
that'd be a moment. If I was a player and my athletic director was crying on the sideline after a tennis match, I'd feel very invigorated in pride of country, pride of school.
Agreed.
So I would get more emotional, I think, for like coaches winning stuff. Like I could see myself, like, let's say a coach gets inducted into a Hall of Fame. Let's say something happens, like something like that, just because of the time spent with him. I could see myself, I don't know that I'd cry, but that would probably
in
be something.
In empathy with the coach.
Just knowing what they've gone through and to see their career arc. I think the hard thing in college is you're kind of moving on to the next one. I mean, it's not
the
in a bad
the concept.
But I mean, it's crazy where, you know, we'll have senior days or we'll have graduations and you'll see kids walking and you're like, wait, that kid's a senior? Like, it just moves so quickly.
Are you going to cry when Shea Spencer graduates? He's been a constant with Kaiser football.
Yeah.
He's been there for three presidencies.
Yeah, I mean, he has been there a while. And I don't think I'll cry, but I think it just moves so quickly that, you know, with coaches, I mean, we've got some coaches that have been there for a really, really long time. So part of it is just seeing the programs they've built and what it's taken over 10, 8, 9 years. That's something that you're tied to.
Of course, if Russo and Rizzo get like some big award in South Florida of like something big, you know, and we're at this big event, concert hall, of course you'll be
there. I'm just waiting for you guys to get sent somewhere on location. I feel like between the Super Bowl and Heat Media,
they
don't send you guys anywhere.
Don't get us started. We don't get anywhere.
We don't get the Heat. We don't get the Panthers. I always tune in to see
who's on site in there. It's Theo.
Yeah. And you don't like that, huh?
It's fine. I'm just saying.
They got beef. Him and Theo got beef.
Yeah, you don't like Theo, huh? Theo Dorsey?
No, I don't dislike Theo, but yeah, we can have a recap one day. I'm for you guys. You guys, yeah, you guys get,
well,
you know.
Chris, we appreciate you going to bat
so
for us.
So it's like they make you lock the doors at night.
If Mike and I are at the Super Bowl, would you cry? Or like we win a big award somewhere, you would cry for us in unison because you're part of the show.
I would want to know where my check's at. I mean, if I'm part of the show, then
yeah.
Chris, how do you feel after the Florida State loss against Miami over the weekend?
So the thing that sucked, I would say, would be, or that was, I guess, interesting, is how, like, the first drive was great. I mean, we're playing. We're playing at 6 o'clock, so I'm on the sideline of the Kaiser game. I got the game cast on my phone because I know there's no way I'm not going to know what the score is because people are going to, you know, just, I'm going to hear about it.
Right.
So I just looked on and the first drive was like, whatever, 5-6 minutes. So I was like, okay, they held the ball. It looked like it was, you know, it looks like they came out with some emotion.
There's
and then it kind of fell flat a little bit. And I know there was, you know, from again, looking at it, there were some drives with turnovers or whatever, but you know, you really kind of wanted more off that Virginia game because of the way it ended. You know,
right? You'd think that's what Mike and I thought.
Yeah,
that plus think four and a half.
I thought
they'd be really motivated in that game because you're coming off a bad loss.
Yeah,
and one thing. So this next game is big because obviously.
Well, now every game is big. Yeah,
well, yeah,
you can't
but
lose. You can't.
So
lose.
This, if Norvell drops it, that's the third time he's had three straight losses as a Florida State coach.
Yeah,
yeah, and
which is
your ability to respond after losses is completely indicative on the coach,
and he's really defending himself in these press conferences too. Like,
Miami's really good. I'm
not saying they're not, but have your team ready to play.
Well, my thing is,
my issue is they weren't that desperate team like Colin and I thought they'd look like until 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter when they scored 19 straight points.
Right. Now they did
come
back.
Where was that the whole game though?
I need you to show up for three quarters.
They had 3 points for three quarters. It's an absolute disgrace at home against a rival.
They did come back. So I will give them that. I will also say
no. Too little, too late. It was too. Chris, they needed one more drive. That's why I say show up in the first
FSU
three quarters.
Was pathetic in the game.
It was the most interesting onside kicks I've ever seen because I've never seen that.
The format
put the
which,
ball sideways yes. and mm-hmm. yeah, they needed to come out stronger. So you know it is what it is.
Who do you blame for this? Do they not have enough talent? Is it a coaching thing? I think that could be reflected on the coach. They're the life that they played with.
So one of the things that, yes and no. I mean, I think it's really hard. This is more of a general program thing. So I would say it's really hard to replace key players every year in the portal.
Right.
Right? You call it a rivalry game, but if you're replacing a lot of guys who have never been in that game, it's a game, right?
Especially nowadays.
Year two, year three, you know, you hear the smack talk, you know, especially if you're from the area and you have friends that go, like you start to feel kind of that emotion. But I think, and again, I'm not necessarily, it's just really hard year to year in big games and big moments in rivalry games when you're constantly flipping the roster to kind of know what you're going to get in certain situations.
So you're saying there's a lot of guys in this year's roster who didn't necessarily have that fire in them because they don't have the legacy of the rivalry.
I'm saying a 7:30 primetime game on Saturday. Number two team in the country at home. You know, great players play in great moments. And I'm just saying when you're constantly turning the roster over, you don't know who's stepping up in what moments, right? Who you can count on. Like now granted, they've had some great play from the receivers this year. The running game has been solid. I'm just saying like to get this, usually, I mean, I looked at a stat I wrote down, like the last 8 college football national champs have had at least 11 starters back who have played 6 games. They've started for 6 games.
Yep.
And I just think the reason for some of that is you know who to count on in key moments. You need a first down, you know which side you're running off of. You know who to count on.
Chemistry.
And I think they're still figuring that out. Let me
help Chris out a little bit too. The last 2 champions, all right, Michigan, Ohio State returned a lot. That's why I like Penn State heading into the year because they had a ton coming back and we all know how that turned out, Chris. But I feel like
I saw a stat. UCLA did not have a lead in any games.
That was their first lead.
Chris, they were the worst Power 4, Power 5, what do you want to call it, team in the country. In the country.
Right.
And Penn State lost that game.
Yeah.
Penn State's always going to Penn State.
Correct.
Yeah.
But let's leave Penn State out. But that, you know, to your point, that's what has been winning national championships recently are guys returning and being a part of the program.
I think part of coaching,
and being able to retain them in the portal.
But it's, I mean, okay, so you had 2 games against, you know, low-level teams, right? So you had Alabama, Then you have the Virginia game. Then you have Miami. You take the other two out. So I think from a coaching staff, you're still trying to figure out at this point with the new group, who am I leaning on? Who am I counting on? Who's stepping up in big moments? And so I think with continuity, you know from last year, when you're flipping, when all your receivers, your running backs, your quarterback's new, you're still trying to figure that out. I mean, could they turn it around? Yeah. But I mean, I think that's one of the challenges of not having, you know, from year to year, just kind of having like a core group, right? If you have, you know, 11, 12, 13. Now, granted, it didn't work for Clemson this year. For Penn State. But I do have an interesting question for you. So Penn State, I heard this. So Penn State, Franklin's buyout's about $48 million. Yeah. Norvell's about $50. Let's play fantasy football here. If you could flip the two and just say, hey, both of them say, hey, we're done. We want to flip coaches. Who do you think is more successful over the next 5 years? Franklin at Florida State or Norvell at Penn State?
Franklin at Florida State. Would you agree with that?
I would think so, but
I would say Franklin at Florida State.
I think he wouldn't have to run into the boogeymen like Ohio State and company.
He would have to do exactly what he did at Penn State coming in, and that is to make them continuously great every single year.
So is the issue the Big Ten? Penn State? What is why?
I think you're putting a good
why guy. I think Franklin will be better is because I still think the top heaviness of the Big Ten is better than the ACC. Now, Miami is I'm very high on Miami, for the record.
But they didn't lose the top. They lost to UCLA.
Franklin's also a better coach than Norvell is. The answer is yes.
I agree with Colin Franklin at Florida State. But I think Franklin would be better against the quote-unquote bigger teams. I think Ohio State collectively is a better team still than Miami. But Miami is really – Chris Ball's growing on me with what they got going there. They do well in the portal. They got guys that come back. They have veteran guys. I think Miami is slowly trying to turn themselves into a national powerhouse. They just got to win they got to do the things they haven't. They got to win the ACC. They got to go to the championship. That's why I think the Big Ten is still better because of the top-heavy teams. Hence why I think Franklin would be more successful in the ACC. Again,
you only think that because of the conference? Think that about the coach? The coach is a better coach.
I think it's because of the conference.
He's a better coach.
I think James Franklin would do well in the ACC. I do.
But he's a better coach, too.
I think Franklin...
That's it. It's not about the conference.
Franklin, Cristobal, and Norvell are all in, I think, a similar category when it comes to a coach. They're waiting for their breakthrough moment. You know, I always said with Mario, he's going to feed five generations of households in his family because of the win against Columbus. Norvell is going to feed five generations of families from the 13-0 year and then the disgrace they pulled in the Georgia game. So I think they're and Franklin, the Christian talks about the 16 win he had against the Buckeyes all the time and winning the Big Ten that year. Every one of those coaches has had their moment in the past. They've been unable to break through to the other side.
Right. But these are both in the same category. You're just making this declaration off of what? Let's put this into perspective for a second.
Yeah, because Norvell.
James Franklin, to your point, James Franklin has done better consistently at Penn State in a harder conference comparatively to Mike Norvell at Florida State in a worse conference.
I would argue the conference.
All right, see, here it is. Yeah. Here comes the Florida State.
I would argue that the conference isn't as.
I agree. Big Ten this year is not that good.
Yes. Last
year. They have the best team in the country, though.
All right. All right.
It's the bottom.
We need to get the Ohio State out of here for a second.
It's not. Look at the statistics.
Mike, the Big Ten stinks. The Big Ten is not having a great year.
But again, they have the best team in the country.
Right, I know. Fine.
Okay. I think
got the second best team. Got to say it.
Hold on. The ACC has the best team in the country.
I disagree, but so does the AP poll.
I do think, with those two, again, I think it goes back to Miami breaking through is tough only because they haven't done it before. So, I mean, it's going to be difficult for some of those guys.
In the early 2000s, they were the household name.
No, what I mean is the guys on the team, it's really, and I say this even with our own.
Right.
For a team to advance all the way through and win a championship the first year.
They should probably be there the year
prior. It is difficult just because there's so many things you're seeing for the first time.
Yeah.
Everything's new to you. If you go, I look back at the year we went and lost. We're accomplishing things for the first time. That second year, it almost was like an annoyance. Like, we have to do this again. Like you weren't excited. You were ready. So
yeah.
If Miami does do it, it would be very impressive if they're able to pull it off.
But Kyle, to make it easier, yes, I think Frank would have more success in the ACC than Norvell in the Big Ten.
Franklin would have to get Florida State back on a stable boat, and I think he'd be able to do that. That's what he's good at. You know, the top end stuff is not what he does. Norvell, at a certain point, just needs to get the guys invigorated week in, week out. That he has not done.
Who's had more talent?
There's no doubt, but the talent is a reflection of the coach. So, at a certain point.
Do you think Florida State's had more talent
I think Penn State
has had more talent, but Penn State having more talent is because of the head coach. It's not just because of the money. Florida State's got money. It's bad with the guy who could get the right players in there. You got to give Franklin credit for that because he's produced a lot of pros and they've had a lot of good players. Yep. He just hasn't been able to win championships with them.
And
There's no doubt about that.
Chris, I kind of feel bad for you a lot in the Florida State fan this year because, and granted, actually, I'm going to exclude you because you thought they'd be better than advertised. Most Florida State fans are like, let's just get 6 wins. You beat Alabama, and then, oh, my God, the expectations are back. Mm-hmm. And then you lose to Virginia, and you lose to Miami, and now, like, Florida State fans don't know how to feel. It's been a roller coaster already for Florida State fan, but I feel like Norvell, granted, he could fall on his face at the second half of the season, but I feel like Norvell has brought back a standard of, like, being a respectable team, right? And who says that Florida State can't go?
I mean, this team won 2 games last year.
I mean, they need 8 to 9 wins. It's built in. I mean, you have Stanford on your schedule. You got Pitt on your schedule. You got Wake Forest.
About to say, like, they could.
I mean,
like, and to make Florida State feel a little bit better, Colin, they could go undefeated and make. If they have 2 losses at the end of the year with the win against Alabama, they will be in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's a big. That's a big IF. You're right. 10 team power four teams get. But usually, I think usually get in.
What needs to happen is the staircase, right? Like you have to build and then continue to get better each year. You can't have the get 8 or 9 wins.
You can't fluctuate.
Stay at 8 or 9, go up to 10, 11, go down to 6. Like, it's got to continue to build.
Yeah, and the pressure's sadly, the pressure is on now not to lose. And I'm interested to see if Norvell can handle that. I'll be very impressed at the end of the year if they only have two wins.
I mean, they have guys. I mean, you know, receivers have stepped up. The running game has been impressive.
The problem with them is they haven't played like their hair's on fire. And you haven't gotten that sense. They walked in half asleep to Virginia. They got blitzed. Right. And then they got blitzed against Miami.
But again, there's a difference between being an underdog and when you have a number in front of you, a 2, an 8, a 6.
Yeah.
It is completely different. And you don't have time to catch up in the moment. Like you walk into a game, the underdog wants to beat you. They have less pressure at home, you know, like Virginia.
So you think Florida State's better suited for that?
No, I'm saying I think it takes time. It takes the right guys who have been there and been part of that and over time to play that way. And you can get it, but it doesn't happen overnight. You know, that's why, you know, with Florida State, you don't go from 2-10 to 13-0. Like there was going to be some hiccups along the road.
2 weeks ago, you walked in here and you were like, the expectation is to beat Miami.
I was. I thought they were going to do.
You thought it would be a Florida State. Expectation is they win that game at home.
If they beat Miami, I thought they'd lose to Pitt.
You thought another loss, loss was on the
schedule. It was going to happen. Because, again, it's just it is so hard to keep 18 to 22-year-olds, 23-year-olds with everything going on when you have them in that moment going and focused 24/7 all the time, especially when – If you're highly ranked and the media's coming to town,
yeah, and
you
have you're all starting this to buy into your own hype, yes.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, you know, like even that Alabama game, great win, but did they buy into a little bit, you know?
Did they buy into their own hype? Absolutely.
People start doing stuff that are out of character. Right. And that's a coach's job to keep them in that lane. I mean, that is their job to keep them motivated. And again, they haven't necessarily been there yet, and it takes time. How much time that they're going to get, I don't know on that one.
He's got the buyout, so he'll be there for quite a bit. Chris, what's up ahead for the Kaiser schedule in the fall season?
Again, we got football on the road at Florida Memorial this week. Then next week we return home against St. Thomas, and the following week's homecoming with Weber. Men's and women's soccer, again, are having great seasons. We're honestly getting close to the end of conference play. So volleyball is the same. You know, they're trying to hold suit to be able to make the conference tournament, make a late run. And then we have our winter sports are getting going. Swimming just competed down at FIU. They go on the road to Savannah this week. You got basketball starting up in 2 weeks. Wrestling will be getting going, so we're getting into the thick of it. I'm interested to know what Mike's doing on our homecoming game because we still haven't done the field goal.
It's a good point.
I don't know if there's like a pregame kickoff.
What's the official date of that?
What's the date?
It would be it's the 25th.
25th.
Saturday?
Yeah.
I'm assuming an Inter Miami playoff game. So the final regular season game for Inter Miami is the 18th. I'm assuming the week following is going to be the first round. But if I'm not busy, I'm interested.
All right, let's do it.
I'm not busy.
Start warming up the leg. We'll see what happens.
And the parameters are, what was the exact number you said?
It was a 35, from the 35-yard line?
It was a 35-yard field goal.
And you said you would hit
35-yard line, it's a 52-yard field goal. Calm down.
Yeah, no, I said I could hit a 35-yarder.
Okay, but you said there was a percentage there. You said if given a certain amount of tries, you would hit a certain amount.
But wasn't it 1 and 3?
We can only do one try. I'm not going to
sit
there.
We can do three.
I don't want to.
It's like the dunk contest. Like if you miss the first one, but it's close, people want more.
Yeah.
So you kind of can hype up the crowd. I would say.
I don't want to sit there.
You could do a walk off. You hit the first one, you're done. But if you have a bad first one, you don't want a second kick.
I have. Like I said, you said the 25th. I
got to
check the schedule.
Yeah.
I got to check the schedule. If the 25th works, I'll be there.
25th works. Mike will be there. That's Chris Swager, the Kaiser University Athletic Director. Mike Rizzo, Colin Russo, Christian Katt. Russo, Rizzo, ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Russo and Rizzo, ESPN 106.3. Colin Russo, Mike Rizzo, Christian Katt. We're streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter /X at ESPN West Palm. If you're somebody like Mike and you get emotional watching your sports, you want to make sure that your health is in check on top of that. You could go to Men's Only Medical where Mike was earlier today, or was it yesterday?
Yesterday, in preventative action. You know, we're taking preventative action
at
Men's Only Medical.
Don't want your blood pressure to get too high.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle, when you're 50, 60, 70, 80, I want to make sure that, you know, I'm still in the best possible shape and health I could possibly be. And as a 30-year-old, that's what I'm doing over at Men's Only Medical. Also doing a little weight and nutrition management. It's the concierge healthcare service, folks. You see all of these clinics around for women. Well, this is the one-stop shop for men, for concierge healthcare, and your one-stop shop for the clinic. So hair loss solution, skin assessment, expert cardiovascular healthcare, your heart, folks. I mean, I did the EKG test. We did everything with Doc Al over at Men's Only Medical. Kyle was there for the skin assessment. I saw how dirty my skin was, but at the same time, I also saw that I was 90 percentile as far as wrinkles and how my skin is aging. So you can find all this great stuff out with Doc Al at Men's Only Medical. The blood tests, too. We found something that, you know, isn't a problem right now, but maybe down the line can be a problem. And I am taking the proper steps to make sure that it's not a problem, as I've mentioned, when I'm 50, 60, 70 years old. Go get your concierge healthcare subscription with Men's Only Medical. Go to mensonlymedical.com. Doc Al, local guy, man. Cardinal Newman, man. Huge Hurricane fan. I texted Doc Al after the Hurricanes beat Florida State over the weekend. He was at the most recent Dolphin Monday Night Football game, too. Go see Doc Al on North Dixie Highway and go to mensonlymedical.com for more information.
Tigers tied it up against the Seattle Mariners, 3-3, top six. They've both moved on to the bullpens at this point. Casey Mize was able to give them a couple innings. This is going to be strategic pitching the rest of the way.
Yeah, and
I'd love that to go to be a five-game series. It's been too close the entire way for it not to be a five-game series.
I do, too. And, Kyle, you mentioned the fans. They did a pan. They're there now. There are a lot of fans in that building now. I got to give Detroit fan that.
They weren't there in the third inning.
They did a pan around. There's not a seat to be had there in Detroit. So fair play to them for getting off work and heading over to the game. But I want all of them. Obviously, do you agree with? And we'll get to tonight's game more with the Phillies and the Dodgers.
Well, they're all four of them are playing today.
That's over though. Phillies and
I don't. All four of them are playing today, and you got three. I mean, basically every team has a chance to move on. But the teams that could force the AL side of things could force a fifth game tonight. And let me ask you this. Of the four remaining, how many are going to a five?
I think the Yankee series is.
So the Yankees got to win tonight. Okay.
I think they're going to win tonight. I think Detroit's going to be able to pull this thing off at home. Top 6-3-3 right now. Absolute thriller of a game. I think Philadelphia is dusted. Would you agree with me on that?
I think the Cubs are more dead than the Philadelphia
Now, we'll
is.
See. I think the Cubs can win a game at home. I'm rooting for them to win. I told you I've hitched my bucket to the cubby wagon, so I'm hoping that they're able to win at home. I think the only game that wraps up tonight is Phillies and Dodgers. I think that's I think Dodgers completely dismantle Aaron. The Phillies tonight with Nola. I mean, Yamamoto's supposed to go tonight too. Come on, man, that's over.
Yeah, and Nola's had a really bad year.
That's over.
Really bad.
And deserved. The Dodgers, I think, I think the Dodgers...
0-6 on the road, too, Nola.
The Dodgers look like that unstoppable team right now. They look like that unstoppable team in the MLB.
Yeah. Aaron Nola's 0-6 on the road. This would be the type of game that, you know, six scoreless, you know, vintage pitches a gem. That's the type of weirdness that baseball sort of lends itself to. That's the only reason I could see that. Just because I think the Phillies are due for something. Because if you get that bye and all of a sudden you lose in three, that's pretty pathetic.
I agree.
Pretty pathetic. So you got to be in a position here to make a little noise now that you're not in the pressure of your own building. And the Dodgers are, they're going to want to close it out tonight. I don't know how aggressive they'll be, but they'll want to close it. And Yamamoto has been very consistent for them throughout. So if Aaron Nola can put something together, I would be surprised if the Dodgers took care of business easily like they did in the first two games in Philadelphia. I really would be. Yep. I don't know. I think if there's a game where Schwarber, Harper, the quiet bats in the front of the lineup, if they were to get going, I would say it's now because they've been relying on that back half, the Castellanoses of the world and Marshes. I would be surprised if we see nothing from those guys in the first the game tonight.
I really do think the Dodgers could turn into that team that's just better than everybody again. They have the talent. They have the players. And I think it's been on the forefront of that. I mean, they tried blowing that game, too. They tried blowing game two.
Yeah, I thought Roberts did not handle that. I mean, it was 4-0, and they got it up to a one-run game with a man on third. I mean, it was a tricky spot, but they were able to get out of it. The Dodgers, you're right. They just probably have more playoff performers than everybody, especially hitting the ball. Mm-hmm. Like, we're watching Toronto, and we're watching Milwaukee. Big game hitting, surprising people. Now, it's been almost exclusively in their buildings to this point, but, you know, seeing Bryce Turang and Sal Frelick and there's a lot of good players on Toronto as well, but, you know, everybody just killing you in the lineup. The Dodgers do that, but these are proven commodities, and especially on the road. Mookie Betts, I mean, Teoscar Hernandez, Kike Hernandez, who's the most unbelievable anomaly of a player I think I've ever seen in terms of how well he plays in the postseason. You have Shohei whenever he's on. You still have Freddie, Muncy, Edmund. You have so many guys that are postseason coded that you almost feel like it's inevitable that they're just going to break open at any point. And they also got a great manager. So I would agree that the Dodgers are the best team in the field, and I think that they would probably take care of business of Milwaukee. But you got to give Milwaukee credit because playing with a little juice right now and a little momentum, it might be the team of magic versus the team of inevitability, the unstoppable force of moving.
Yeah, what was it? Two nights ago when I texted you guys with Chirio hit the homer, they have magic. They look like they have magic. They've been pitching well, too. I was really high on the Cubs after winning that wild card series, too. So I think it'll be a good series. Now, I think Brewers and Dodgers could turn into a pretty good series. These are two teams that have obviously both won over 93 games in the regular season. But I think you hit the nail on the head with the experience part. The experience for the Dodgers, that lineup. I mean, Betts, Freeman, Ohtani. Ohtani stunk at the plate in the first two games, and they really have been able to handle business. So I just think they're too deep.
We're getting to a little 5-5 on the other side of things. First, we're sitting in the studios. The Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. Been in that car accident, truck accident, suffered a slip and fall. Mark Anajar and Glenn Levine at Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys are the type to fight for you. They got my back in an accident or not an accident. Glenn Levine will let me his bike back for basically 3 months when I was doing the triathlon training. That's how good of a guy that Glenn Levine is at Anajar and Levine. And they don't even charge you unless you win. They want to make sure you get the most out of it. And they work tirelessly to get you the maximum compensation that you deserve in these cases. Don't settle for just anybody. Settle for the best. Demand Anajar and Levine now because that's the Anajar and Levine difference. Take just that one phone call. Take back control of your life today. Don't wait. Call for the free consultation now. Call 1-800-747-FREE. 1-800-747-3733. Take back control of Anajar and Levine. Will loop in Christian Cat. Do a little 5-5 on the other side of things. It's Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.